You're listening to another episode of Classic Movies Live, the pre-recorded show where we talk about movies that just came out. And we've been on break for a few weeks now, but we're back. And it kind of feels like a new year, even though it definitely isn't. This is our eighth episode of this season of 2025. And, well, we got an exciting movie to talk about. We're going to, you know, catch you guys up with, you know, what's been going on with us recently. It's nothing too terribly exciting, but... you know, just to kind of give a little bit of an update. And then we're going to talk about our first movie since coming back from the Oscars, which is Christopher Landon's Drop. This is a really fun one. We both saw this in theaters last week, and this is a horror movie about basically airdrops. That's the central conceit of the movie. We'll kind of get into it and tell you a little bit more about what that means when we... and we actually start talking about it. It's a very fun premise. It's a very fun movie. And it's got, you know, it's actually got, you know, a little bit of heart, too. So I think it's fair to say where we both kind of like this movie. So, you know, we'll talk about the reasons why, sort of go into it a bit. And also, beyond that, this is going to be a... there are spoilers in this episode, but we have a good spoiler warning. And you will not miss it. Drop has a soundtrack by Bear McCreary, who I'm sure you know from all sorts of things, like Outlander or God of War, and we're going to give you just a little bit of what that music sounds like right here. Welcome back to another episode of Classic Movies Live, the pre-recorded show where we talk about movies that just came out. It's been a while. I think this is episode 8 of the year, but it is notably not week 8 of the year. And I think our last episode was week 7 of the year. I think we did the first 7 weeks, and then it took us a bit to come back. But that said, how you doing, Pierre? How's it going?
I'm solid. Movie-wise, I feel like there hasn't really been much that came out in the past 2 months, I guess. So not too definitely many movies that I've seen, to be honest.
Definitely not like the big blockbusters. Those are all still coming. I was a little surprised, actually. This is the year that the sequel to Megan comes out. And I was very surprised that that's like a summer movie now. Because that was like a big highlight of trash January a few years ago. And the sequel, I would have expected to be in that same time frame, but not so much.
Well, yeah, I guess it kind of got upgraded since it did pretty well in that slot. This year, because I feel like there's usually like one or two movies that are kind of thrown into, you know, January, February to like, I don't know, the studios aren't expecting much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And usually there's like one movie that kind of pops up surprisingly. I feel like this, like I'd say last year, an example of that would be like Kong versus Godzilla. I feel like that wasn't like, or was it? Maybe it was. I don't know. I wasn't expecting it to do as well as it did, if that makes sense.
I don't know if it's 100% like an example of what you're saying, but like Godzilla versus Kong, it did come out during a time where there was not that much competition for that movie. Like, it was the biggest movie that came out that week by a long shot.
Yeah, and like no competition, so yeah, it could kind of lay out slightly. This year, yeah, you could argue Captain America was maybe an attempt at that, and I think it did pretty well given the fact that there's literally been like no, I'd say, like family oriented action blockbuster in the past like 4 months. But yeah, it definitely wasn't like a success based on that. Felt like people were kind of watching that because there was literally nothing else to watch.
That
genre.
I don't know the exact numbers. I was under the impression that it did okay, all things considered, for a movie, but pretty god awful for a Marvel movie.
Yeah, it's like if this was like Marvel Phase One, I'd say this would, it would be like a light success. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of like rumors about like how many reshoots were done, and people are like, sometimes apparently Disney will sometimes like officially announce a budget that is actually like nowhere near to what it actually is, just for like to make them look better, maybe accounting reasons. Because I was reading like stuff like Doctor Strange, it said like I think 180 as the official budget. But there were a lot of reports that it was like more near like 350, 400 million, just because of like it was during COVID and there's so many reshoots happening and the script was like in various forms of finish throughout the shoot. So,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess I shouldn't really care that much about Hollywood accounting because it never concerns me. But like any attempt to talk about it is just so weird. It's like the budget number has to get doubled in order to make any kind of profit. And even then, right, because of Hollywood accounting, sometimes it doesn't, or sometimes that's a massive profit depending on how they decide to claim it. It's just so weird.
Yeah, there is a lot randomly to it. But yeah, sorry to answer your question. I've mostly just been working. It's been pretty busy at the theater I work at. So between two jobs, it's honestly been most of my time for the past 2 weeks. What about you, Jeff? What have you been up to?
I've actually been watching a lot of movies. I've been doing a lot of reviews for the ContraZoom Pod website. I have this problem. It's going to sound like a humble brag, but like anytime someone sends me, hey, would you like to watch our movie so you can review it? I'm like, hell yeah, free movie? Sure, why not? And then I'll just like take on way too many of these, and I have a whiteboard in my house that I keep with like, do this and try to cross off things as I go. And at a certain point, like I think yesterday, I just like erased one review that I was going to do that I had written on there that I had to do, because I'm like, it's just not going to happen at this point. I saw the movie 2 weeks ago. I decided to review it, and then I didn't do anything for 2 weeks. So like I've let a few reviews lapse because I just like keep taking on responsibilities that I probably shouldn't be, but I have written already a lot of reviews. Anyone's that my editor over at ContraZoom, Dakota Arsenault, knows about have in fact been delivered. I don't like committing to things and then having to do them. So a lot of times I'll just like do a review and then send it in and be like, hey, here's a surprise. That way, if I don't do the review, no one knows about it.
Right.
So yeah, mostly a lot of that. And like I also have a new job that's been keeping me busy, and some other behind the scenes stuff that may or may not be relevant to this to here. Probably nothing I should announce, but like I've got lots of things to keep me busy. So yeah, I've appreciated the break, but it also hasn't really felt like a break from very much.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Cool. Well, we have a new movie this week. It's a Blumhouse film, which we haven't really done too many of these, right?
I feel like we probably have, but like maybe not intentionally. Like Blumhouse has a lot of movies. They produce a lot of things, and a lot of times I don't think they have as distinct an identity as some other production companies. So sometimes you'll see a movie and it's just like, oh, shoot, this is a Blumhouse movie.
Right, yeah.
Like, I know we've done a few at least, because I know we did The Invisible Man. We didn't talk about Wolfman, but that was also Blumhouse. I think all of the newer Halloween movies, the new trilogy, I think that was all Blumhouse.
Really? Oh, wow.
I think that's like one of their big franchises that they acquired rather than like creating it.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about a few, but like, yeah, again, not a whole lot, maybe intentionally. Yeah, okay. Looking through like recent Blumhouse movies, we've talked about a few of these, but again, yeah, not a lot necessarily. Oh, Megan. Right, Megan. So this is a movie that I was lucky enough to see early and actually did write a review of, which I can link below in case anyone wants to listen to that. And in case anyone wants to, yeah, listen to my written review. Yeah, read my review.
Yeah.
This is a movie called Drop, which is by Christopher Landon, a director I whose name I've heard a bunch, but I don't think I'm actually that familiar with his stuff. Have you seen Happy Death Day, Pierre?
I have, like, well, I guess when it came out, I think it was like, that was like one of the first horror movies I think I watched, quote unquote horror, I guess, because it was a really fun time though. It's a very, very done before concept, but they had a lot of fun with it. And I remember really liking the main actress for it. She brought a lot of charisma to the role.
But that was back in 2017, and Happy Death Day is like that's a time loop movie.
Yeah.
That was before, it wasn't before the invention of time loop movies. Like, those have always existed, but there was like a big recent boom of time loop movies, and it was before that. Because like Palm Springs and what other time loop movies were there? I feel like there's a lot more time loop movies than maybe there are. I don't know why Palm Springs is literally the only one I can think of right now. Beyond Groundhog Day, but I'm right, trying to think of like the new
I don't ones. Know. Yeah, you know what? Like, those are the only ones that come to mind, I guess, because I guess because of Groundhog Day, it feels like it's been done so many times before. Like, you could say,
and it has been done a lot. It's not like this is like, it's not like there are none. It's just, and there's, I guess there's only a few that like really stand out.
Yeah.
We've probably talked about at least one time loop movie and are just forgetting about
it. Well, we talked about Palm Springs, I guess.
Well, we didn't have a full episode on Palm Springs, I don't think, did we?
Oh, maybe not. Yeah, that might have been a retrospective. Yeah. But yeah, someone's done it. But anyways, yeah, so we have done a few of their movies. And yeah, this director, crazy history. I will say Drop definitely feels very in kind of tone or consistent with the Happy Death Day franchise. So just from like the little I know of this director, like they're both like very, I'd say, like relatively corny concepts. And I don't think anyone is going into these movies expecting to be like really scared. But there's definitely it's just like a fun, corny, soft horror vibe, I would call them.
Yeah, and I think that like what's really refreshing about, well, at least about this movie, and I assume about the other ones, is that like, even though it's, especially for Happy Death Day, like it's more comedy than horror, like they're horror comedies, like the horror part is still like taken seriously.
Yeah.
And I guess this one's not really a comedy. It's a little funny, but like, it's really more of a, I guess it's like almost, this movie is really cool because it's kind of it's basically a whodunit. And I think it leans really strongly into that more over the horror. But I also don't really think it like advertised itself as that much of a horror either.
No, not really. Like, yeah, I guess you could say it's more like a thriller slash like, I'd definitely say from the trailer, they're trying to add some like, they're trying to represent it as maybe some having some action elements to it. In the movie itself, that's really like, it's very, very contained into like a very small portion of the movie. So yeah. And, but honestly, like the trailers like, so were so silly and stupid that I couldn't resist them. So yeah,
I don't think the movie is a comedy, but I do think the movie is like silly in the same vein as the trailers. Like the trailers are not misleading you with how silly this movie does get.
Right, yeah. It's I don't know what do you want to talk a bit about the movie itself?
Yeah, so Drop, I think that it's so funny that the central concept of this movie is so funny to me, and I like that like it's not treated as a joke either, which is very fun. So the basic idea is that two people are on a date, a woman played by Megan Fahey, whose name is Violet. And then her date is Henry, played by Brandon Sklenar, I think is his name. They're on a date, and while they're on that date, Violet gets an airdrop of a meme that says, like, do you want to play a game? And then she gets another one that's like, stop ignoring my airdrops. And then it's like, Violet, I'm going to kill your family. Stop ignoring me now. So it's like she starts getting evil airdrops, basically.
Right, yeah.
That, you know, obviously derail her date, but basically the guy she's getting pressured into doing increasingly bad or criminal things to basically sabotage her date before ultimately she gets an airdrop like, okay, now kill your date. And she has to figure out who's airdropping her memes.
Right, yeah.
So that she can, like, thwart this guy who must be within 50 feet of her before she has to kill her date.
Yeah, and these are, like, really corny memes, by the way. These are, like, some, like, these are, like, memes you've seen on the internet, like, 10 years ago type stuff. Like, they're classics.
But yeah, like, they have silly, like, sign guy and like the guy peeking out from the behind the tree, like
a bunch of classic ones, which I like because I feel like anyone could see those and like recognize them, or like anyone familiar with, you know, general meme culture.
And I also think that like when they eventually reveal more about who is sending the airdrops, it ends up making sense why they're all old memes. Like, right. It feels cringy, and it feels cringy like with intent.
Yeah,
like on purpose.
Yeah. They like, it's the movie's playing into it, I think, and there's a kind of like humor to be found in like, you know, this woman's extreme reactions to like these really like genuinely like stupid memes, and she's like, but you know, that was part of the fun. It's stuff like that that kind of reminded me of like Megan, I guess, too. I don't know if we had
a full episode on Megan, I'm pretty sure.
No, I don't know if we mentioned that already. But yeah, like Megan, it's also was, I mean, I actually, there was a trailer for Megan too for this right before this, so I got a little familiar with it as well. But they're like, it's really stupid, to be honest. Like, and like the writers are just having fun with it, and it's good. It's cool that the characters all play it like straight faced, obviously. And I think it just adds like a really fun time. But yeah, like I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
So like in general, what did you think of this movie in general?
It was solid. Like I said, I love the corniness. I love a lot of the I guess like the random characters in that restaurant. I was surprised. I thought they would leave the restaurant in the third act or something, but it's all there.
Yeah.
Other than like the last 10 minutes, I guess, which was cool. And, you know, they kind of set up an environment where you were kind of equally feel like you're surrounded by possible friend or foe at the restaurant. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of setting up of very small character bits throughout the date. And there's like, I didn't really care too much who it was like that. I guess that wasn't what I was like thinking about the whole time, which I think was smart because it would have been pretty tiring to just be like looking for this person. Because in the meantime, the text dialogue and the way the main character was being threatened, I love the dynamic text. I thought it was really like the way they weren't just showing her screen, which like that would have been a horrible movie, you know, like showing but they were like, there was kind of like, it reminded me of a bit of I'd say John Wick, where you just had like the fonts and the text was kind of almost felt like it was part of like the cinematography itself. You know, there's a lot of shots that were made to accommodate the text and other stuff like that. But that sort of silly suspense kept me pretty intrigued through the whole thing. It's not a very long movie, so I think they made a good call there for sure.
Yeah, on the note of the text, like the one shot that really stood out to me is like there's a shot where she's talking to her date, but she gets a text, and like if you were to remove the text, it's her face over in like the bottom right corner with a huge window next to her. But like because of the way that the movie is, you don't remove the text is there, and it like takes up the whole screen, like she's being yelled at by her phone, even though she's just like over here, and she, you know, can only emote so much looking at her phone. I think the use of like the subtitles in this was really, really cool. It kind of made it so that like you had this one person who could interrupt without interrupting and did it all the time. Like doesn't cut anyone off mid sentence or anything, but like fully a third voice in basically every conversation, which was really cool.
Yeah. And that playing of like, you know, she's checking her phone and she's trying not to like react at all to what is being said over the text, but she also has to, you know, interact with the people around her and try her best to make what she is saying believable so no one realizes her son's being threatened, you know?
Yeah.
That's just a very fun tension to play with. And they do that a lot in the movie, and it never really gets tiring. And that, like, they don't overdo it at all. And I think, like, they were really smart to add, like, the, like, in the end, like, this was a first date. And I liked how they still, you know, there was still, like, the stages of a first date. There's a lot of small talk, little joking, some flirting. And then there's, like, a scene where, like, this incident kind of gets them to open up to each other. And for her, she's doing it because she needs to stall or something like that, I think, right? But it actually does, like, you know, like, their relationship as a pair on their first date does grow throughout the course of the movie, ignoring everything else, you know? So that is also, like, really cool. It wasn't just a throwaway backdrop so we could get some cool, like, thrilling text montages, you know?
Yeah.
There was like, real substance to it in the characters. And I think, again, that helps towards the ending where we want them to be together. And this just feels like a very inconvenient time for all this stuff to happen, you know?
Or at the very least to, like, get another go at a first date.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really cute. And I think, like, I wasn't too fond of, oh god, what's his name?
Brandon Sklenar.
Yeah, he was, like, okay. I guess he wasn't really given much to do, but he's,
yeah.
I didn't feel like the chemistry between him and Megan Fahey or Faheim was, like, great. But also, like, again, there was so much stuff going on, so it's kind of tough. But I did think Megan Fahey like, really blew me away for sure.
Yeah, I think that she's, like, phenomenal in this. Because, I mean, what you mentioned before, where she has to be in, well, she has to be in all these different conversations and also, like, interacting with everybody, but also, like, not letting on what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And I think that the way she manages to do that is really, really good.
Yeah.
And obviously she's in, like, every scene of the movie, so she has an awful lot to do. Brandon Sklenar is a little bit disappointing because he has very little to do, right. But I do think that that's the biggest problem there is just, like, of course he's not going to stand out too much. He's not in the movie very much.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, but other than that, like, I thought the supporting cast was actually, like, excellent. Those little kind of bit characters, like the waiter, the improv waiter was really funny. I like the bartender. She kind of gave, like, she was, like, I guess, like, the only, felt like the normal person in that whole place that was, like, you know, had the main characters back and felt like it's good to have someone there to, like, make the character feel safer, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense. And I really like the piano guy. I thought he was a very interesting character, actually, in his, like, 2 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
It's quite a ride with him.
Yeah, I think the script is just really tight. What I really like about this movie is, like, it's a single location, and over the course of the 90 minutes that this movie is, it's about 90 minutes, I think. Maybe, no, 95. Over the course of that 95 minutes, like, you really get a sense of that location. Like, you know kind of where everyone is in relation to each other. All the characters are, like, introduced very quickly but very efficiently, so you kind of, like, have a good idea of, I guess, who our quote-unquote suspects are throughout the movie. I see this movie basically as a whodunit. I already said it once. And, like, I think that my favorite thing about whodunits is all the bit characters who have to have, like, very interesting personalities, so that, you know, on one hand you're thinking, could this guy have done it? But the reason that you even, like, have that thought and engage that thought at all is because it's an interesting person you want to know a little bit more about. When we learn about the improv waiter, it's like, okay, well, what's this guy's story? So we get to hear about the improv waiter, and, like, no, at no point do you seriously think the improv waiter is the guy who's, like, sending her these malicious airdrops.
Right.
But, you know, you think, like, they set it up as just enough of a possibility so that you, like, are interested in his story, and we find out more about the improv waiter.
Yeah, I never thought of it as being a whodunit. That's, like, even though, like, I think that's the whole, like, point of the movie at the start, like, that's the hook.
I also, I really, really love whodunits. So, like, maybe I am a little more inclined to see whodunits in movies that aren't necessarily built that way. Like, to me, I don't remember if I think we did an episode on it, Bullet Train from a few years ago.
Right. Yeah.
Me is like almost Agatha Christie-esque. And like, I don't think this one is that, but like, to me, these are both whodunit. You've got like a detective on a train or a detective in an area trying to figure out who the killer is before time's up. And I just love that style, that framework, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. I do love whodunits too. And I don't know. You never get tired of them, except for Death of the Nile. I got tired of that one pretty quickly.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
But yeah. And there's some cool, like, directing choices in this too to really spice up, because again, it's a pretty simple script, very basic location.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the director choices, like there's this way of like when Violet's looking around the room and she's like thinking of possible suspects, like they'll do like this thing where everything goes dark and we get a spotlight on the person who looks directly at them, and then it just transitions back into like, you know, like regular life, and it looks so seamless, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how they did that, to be honest, but it was really cool. And yeah, it's just those little touch, like the text, that whodunit little touch with the highlights. It's just like, I think it shows like the director trying to go the extra mile here and making the script as good as he really can with what he had.
Yeah, just another thing that I remembered, that location is just really well planned out. Because, I mean, like I already said, you kind of get a feel for where everything is in relation to each other, which is, you know, already very important, I think, in a single location thing like this.
Right.
But beyond that, there's a few shots where I think there's two that I can remember where, like, Violet is metaphorically, and at least in one of them, literally alone. And so the way that they show that, they zoom up so that she gets smaller and smaller and is just surrounded by like a dark room that like kind of fades away.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's a really cool shot. And obviously those shots don't work if you don't know the exact geography of the one place you're in.
Yeah.
But also those shots are literally impossible if you're filming, you know, in a real restaurant, cause you'd have to remove the roof.
Right.
So like, it's cool that they like built the set this way.
Yeah. It's not an expensive movie. It's like 10 million, I think, but the lighting in the place is really like, everything just looks professionally done, you know, like obviously it's like the restaurant itself is very high maintenance or whatever, but like, I think it's gonna sound like I know what directing is like, I'm just guessing, but like, it's a lot of like shiny objects there. It's a big room. I feel like it'd be really tough to light in a way that looks like beautiful the whole movie, but every like space they do, it just like, I don't know, like it just looks very well done, very professional, which just, it sometimes it sounds weird to say, but we have seen multi-$100 million movies that like some of their scenes, you can obviously tell like it's very unprofessionally shot. So it's nice to see that a smaller movie can really, you know, look this nice, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like it looks like it's lit like a fine dining restaurant, and frankly the actual lighting in a fine dining restaurant would probably not work in a film camera, like just by default, like you definitely have to light it differently to make it look that way on screen.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, wow. I really like this movie. I really liked it technically. There's a lot going on. I like the performances, because it is at least at some level a bit of a mystery. I do kind of want to talk about sort of the resolution to it, but the way that this movie unfolds, it is best to go in knowing very little, because it does kind of drip feed you that pretty well. Anyway, what I am basically saying is there's a few more things I want to talk about, but they're going to be spoilers. So here's spoiler territory. If you want to see drop and you haven't yet, you should probably tap out now, because this is spoiler warning.
Right, yeah.
Pierre, what's the biggest spoiler you can think of for drop?
I would say that no one dies. someone dies.
That's not true. Two people die. The piano guy dies, and I want to say his name is Richard.
The main bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I just want to say he's great. He has like basically two scenes, but they're both like, and they're both like completely different characters, but they're both like amazing. Like, he hams it up completely. And like he's just like dripping with like evil in the last scene he's in, and it's just like so funny to see him die because of that.
But like he's also, I don't want to say charismatic. He's actually, his character specifically is the opposite of charismatic, like from the very beginning.
Yeah.
But he's like, you do kind of feel for him a little bit at the beginning, because like we haven't really talked about this too much, and maybe we'll get into it in just a minute, but Violet is a survivor of domestic abuse, and she has not been in a relationship since her previous husband died,
right?
Which was at least several years ago. I think it's probably like 3 to 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So like this is her first date after basically not doing any dating for a long time. So she runs into Richard, played by Reed Diamond, who is this older man who's been set up on a blind date, who also has not been dating for a while. So he's like, oh, I'm so nervous. I don't know what this is like. Is it going to work out? And, you know, you see bits and pieces of him as she'll like walk past, and his date is going very poorly. And it's like, you see that happening, and it's like a little sad. You feel for him a bit, and I really appreciate that. And also, since he's an old man who isn't active on the internet, has like no meaningful internet presence, of course the memes he knows are all going to be like 15 years old.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess he's pretending. He's like, I met this girl on like Friendster or something. And he's like, oh, that's aging me. I'm sorry. But
no, something like that. I think he said like, no, I don't even have a Friendster anymore or something like that. Cause he got set up on a blind date with someone.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Like not on social media. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was just like dripping with like oozing with like fun, evil. And I loved him. Yeah. And oh, like I guess spoilers territory.
He did it.
He did it. And I liked his action scene. I thought it's not really much you can do at the end, I guess. Like there's that scene where she drives back to the house, and it's so stupid because it's like you're telling me she drove into the suburbs in time to like save her kid from this guy who's like in her house. Like doesn't really make much sense, to be honest, but it's like it's a stupid movie, so
The movie is like it doesn't necessarily need it, but the movie does like it just kind of wants like a hell yeah ending. Good right, for yeah. her. And it yeah, gets yeah. it. And yeah. like it doesn't ruin it. It does kind of like feel in line with the movie. Because again, it's ultimately kind of a silly movie.
Yeah. So I was chill. I don't want her kid to die.
That'd be a yeah, really shitty of course. Ending.
So yeah. And other than that, though, I don't think there was anything that really bothered me. Like I'm not going to be like, this is a perfect movie just because it's like it's like it's not really meant to be, you know. It doesn't really do anything I hate, I guess. But, you know, I wasn't exactly like amped during the movie. I wasn't like, this is the best movie I've ever seen. It's like, oh, it's kind of fun. It's enjoyable. Would I really want to watch it again? Maybe not. I don't really think there's anything like truly special here that I feel the need to revisit.
So when I went and saw this, I saw this on a date with like a packed theater, and it was a lot of fun. Like the people in the theater were really reacting to, you know, everything that was going on. And I think that's a good experience. I think that this is definitely a watch this with someone movie at the very least. Very fun. If you can watch it in a theater, definitely what I would. How was your theater experience? You probably watched it in a theater because it's not out on any other way.
It was pretty dead. There was like three people in there, I think. So, yeah.
I got really, I won tickets to this one. So I was at a pre-screening. And so I don't know exactly who was there, but I'm pretty sure it was mostly press. But also because it was a pre-screening, they like made sure that place got filled. So, you know, a full theater, very nice. I don't know how this would have played in an empty theater. I can't imagine it would have been. The crowd would not have been that entertaining if there was no crowd.
No, probably not. I do think it would have been like maybe opening night. There might have been some fun crowd interactions, I guess. But yeah, like other than that, I don't really see anything special about watching it again.
But like, I also really love kind of the space that this movie occupies, which is like these mid-tier, low budget, but looking good enough so that you could get low budget, but marketed to like a mainstream audience. movies that like come out in between bigger stuff. I mean, this one came out in, I guess it's April now, but like this is the kind of movie that you're like really looking forward to when January hits and there's nothing for a bit.
Yeah.
This is a type of like movie space that I really love, because I guess it's one that like, you know, not everybody necessarily pays attention to, but it's like it keeps theaters open between Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And it's like a good thing there, too. Like, this was much better than the Marvel movie I saw this year, which, yeah, you know, hopefully there will be at least one other Marvel movie that yeah, is pretty good this year. Yeah. I guess there is only one more this year, but still. Any final thoughts on Drop?
No, just it's a fun time. I'd suggest it given the current drought. And yeah, it's probably one of the better movies I've seen this year for sure. It's not something I thought I'd say.
Yeah, I should like put together a list of unconventional whodunits. I don't know what to do with that list though. But like, I've just been seeing a lot of movies that I would describe as whodunits, but aren't really like, aren't Knives Out. So like, I don't know. I feel like I can do something with that list. I'll think about it. Mm. Anyway, I say go watch it. I wrote a review of it and my review was very, very positive. So, you know, check it out. I don't know if we're going to be back next week, but we'll find out. We'll figure it out. We're doing a little bit behind the scenes. There's some stuff going on. We got some cool stuff coming up in 2025. I mean, this is the 8th episode of the year, but it feels like the first one because the last one was still Oscars based. Right, and Oscars yeah, is like, been now that while, the Oscars are done, it kind of feels like a new year starts once the Oscars are, once the yeah, Oscars finish.
For sure.
What's our last word, Pierre?
Digidrop.